are listening to the Elastic Great Sheet with DJ Dead to the World, only on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting all the way around the universe on the interweb at spiritplantsradio.com. So do yourself a favor, turn on, tune in as much as you can, and visit our wonderful website, spiritplantsradio.com, for schedules, playlists, archives, and porn.
Surprisingly, very few people know about the 1960s pop culture rumor that Paul McCartney had allegedly died via decapitation in an auto accident on Wednesday, February 9th, 1966, and that the surviving Beatles had orchestrated a cover-up. So the story goes, instead of reporting his death, they decided to keep the band going by hiring a William Campbell, winner of a Paul McCartney look-alike contest, to take his place. These conspiracy theorists would like us to believe that the Beatles trained this Mr. Campbell, teaching him McCartney's vocal parts and bass riffs, while going on to record dozens more hit songs before ultimately breaking up in 1970. But the strangest part of the rumor? Not only did the Beatles hide Paul's death, they supposedly planted clues on their songs, with William Campbell singing about Paul in the first person, and John singing about Paul in the past tense.
Well, here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Paul.
And listen to these bizarre messages from the White Album, heard when playing the song backwards. These rumor mongers go on to suggest that the Beatles also planted clues on their album covers, such as Sgt. Pepper's, where a little girl appears to be staring at a burning car. On Abbey Road, George is dressed as a gravedigger. William Campbell, representing Paul, is barefoot, as corpses are typically buried. Ringo is dressed as an undertaker, John as a minister. Meanwhile, the license plate on a nearby VW Bug informs us that Paul would have been 28 if he had lived. On the back of the Sgt. Pepper album, George very clearly points to a specific lyric, Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock, the supposed time of Paul's auto accident. Last but not least, the strongest and eeriest pieces of quote-unquote evidence are the direct references in songs to head injuries suffered by Paul in an auto accident. Take a listen.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there.
You were in a car crash, and you lost your hair.
He blew his mind out in a car. Didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was from the House of Lords.
So, did the Beatles really plant clues alluding to Paul's death? The only people who know for sure are the Beatles and William Campbell, but we don't think so. The clues may seem at times to be more than eerie coincidences, but that's probably all they are, eerie coincidences. However, after months of researching the subject, we did uncover the unfortunate truth that in 1966, Paul McCartney did in fact die in that car accident. And as for William Campbell, he died of a cocaine overdose in 1977 while on tour with his band, Wings.
deeper we seem to go, the weirder it gets. And I'm beginning to think that all this shit might be real.
Yesterday's
I'm down more.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly I'm not half the man I used to be.
Yeah. bit. It's getting better. It's a little better. All the time.
Paul is dead.
Has the law. Has ever lost. Has ever.
Do you hear that?
Yes, it's real. Yes, it's real.
Did you hear that one? Holy shit.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
I heard something in there. I don't know. Maybe it's all bullshit.
Hello and welcome back. Welcome to Module 5 of Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis. I'm your tour guide and your mentor, hopefully not your tormentor, but the person who's going to teach you how to use conversational hypnosis. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, and it is my honor and pleasure, and since you bought this program, it is also my duty to teach you and to make sure that you understand conversational hypnosis and how to apply it. What makes this course different, of course, is that it's ultimate conversational hypnosis. So you're going to take what you learn, what you might learn from other programs, and we're going to go way beyond that. And you'll see what I'm talking about later on. It's already beginning to unfold, but as we really get into the material, probably about halfway through, you're going to realize that this program is quite a bit different. So enjoy the slow start, easing you into it, and we're going to pick up the pace in a little bit. But let's take a look at something that I have had a lot of fun with over the years, and that is embedded commands. Embedded commands, the way I like to do them, are known as analog marking. A-N-A-L-O-G, marking, M-A-R-K-I-N, command them to do something, I should reduce that to a three-word phrase. Something that I can deliver in three words. There are a lot of simple commands, and even more complex commands that can be boiled down to just three words. So that is your challenge as you use analog marking, to take what you want the person to do and reduce it to just three words. For example, if you want someone to eat less cake, well, that's a three-word command. If you want someone to remove the trash, let's say you have a wife or husband who's not taking out the trash, or roommate or whatever, child, maybe a parent, is not taking out the trash. So remove the trash or take out trash. Those are three-word commands that get the job done. If you were to say those words to someone, take out trash, well, you might sound very German and very authoritarian and rude. Not that Germans are rude, but you know what I mean. When I think of to the point, I think of my German friend Anna. She's German and to the point, and that's just the way it is, and that's okay. So you've got to bring out the German in you. I'm part German, so I can say that. You've got to boil things down to a three-word command. Now, you're not going to deliver the command in that way. You're not just going to tell someone to take out trash or whatever. You're going to tell it to them in a hidden way. So that is the beauty of the embedded command. It's embedded in other conversation that may not even be about the topic. You may be talking about something completely different than trash, yet you've embedded the command to take out the trash. You see how beautiful that can be? You don't have to be having an argument or even a conversation about the trash. Sure, it's on your mind, and you're delivering the command, but you're not causing that person's blood to boil. Oh, here we go again with the trash, telling me to take it out. You can talk about something completely different and still get them to do that. When I work with clients, I can use embedded commands to help them lose weight. Eat less cake, for example. Anything that I want them to do, if I can boil it down to a three-word command, I can embed it in the conversation. Now, this goes beyond hypnosis, in my opinion, because as with many things with conversational hypnosis, you don't have to have someone in a trance. Are you starting to realize that, okay, I don't have to have them in a zombie-like trance following my commands? Certain things in the world of hypnosis happen in a waking state. You're still commanding them. So if you thought you had to become a master of relaxing someone and maybe dangling a pendulum in front of their face, watch the pendulum go back and forth, and then giving them a secret command, conversational hypnosis happens in a conversation. And that conversation can happen verbally, face-to-face, or oral conversation, or it can happen over the phone, or it can happen by email. That's still a conversation. Or it can happen by texting, or any other way you can communicate with someone and have a conversation. So what I'd like to do is look at several types of communication and how we can embed commands in the conversation. Let's first take a look at talking to someone, to say them more loudly than the rest, just so you could hear them. So you could understand the distinction. All of my words were at one level, except those three words. I sort of paused a little bit and said them more loudly than the rest. Now, when you do this in actuality, when you're out in the field, if you will, and you're trying to make your trees stand out, you want to say your words slightly more loudly than the rest of the words, your three-word command. It's in there, it's being said more loudly, but just slightly more loudly. Now, how in the world do we know what slightly more loudly means? Well, the answer is, it's going to depend on the way you talk. And more importantly, it's going to depend on the results you're getting. You want to say the words louder than the other words, but not so much more loudly that you get caught. They have to be louder than the other words, but they can't be so loud that you're saying something like, I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch on a car and I thought it might be your car. You see what I'm doing there? Too loud. Too much of a difference. Now, if you're shouting everything, shout those words a little more loudly. For example, I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch on a car and I thought it might be your car. So if you're already yelling loudly, just yell a little more loudly when you say those words. What matters here is the difference in volume between the filler words, if you will, the words that are just there to kind of blend with these words, and the three-word command. The difference in volume is what matters. It has to be different, but it can't be so different that it's obvious. As you can imagine, you're going to be doing this for homework, so start getting that in your mind now. We'll talk about that later. Okay, now, as I said, when you're in person, you have a lot of options. You have the ability to do analog marking using different motions, by raising your voice more loudly, by making facial expressions, and anything else you can come up with. Let's take a look at how that would look. Let's go back to our example of scratch your nose. And remember, you can use any three-word command when you're doing embedded commands with analog marking. So, again, the paragraph that I like to use is, when walking down the street the other day. You can change the words if you want every now and then. Doesn't really matter as long as you mark out the commands. When walking down the street the other day, I noticed a scratch on a car, and I thought it might be your car. Then I thought, I wonder if he knows. So I said the words, scratch your nose, a little more loudly than the rest. Now, if I'm in person talking to someone, instead of saying the words more loudly, I can do a specific motion while I'm saying those specific words. Let's say the motion is scratching my head. Maybe you wouldn't use scratching when you're trying to get someone else to scratch. Let's say the motion for this particular one is putting my right hand on my left shoulder. Okay? Now, when you're talking to someone, you can just casually put your right hand on your left shoulder. It doesn't seem to be out of the ordinary. You're just putting it up there. Maybe you're feeling your left shoulder. Maybe you're pretending it's sore. So three times during that paragraph, you would take your right hand and just touch your left shoulder. The point is that there's something different going on when those words are being spoken. So in that paragraph, I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch. When I say the word scratch, my right hand goes up and touches my left shoulder. Now it's only touching my left shoulder while I'm saying that word. So you have to be a little quick here. I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch touching my shoulder on a car. My hand has left my shoulder. In fact, while I'm saying the word scratch, my hand is leaving my shoulder. So I'm only touching my shoulder while I'm saying that word scratch. Saw a scratch, touching shoulder, hand off shoulder, on a car. And I thought it might be your hand on shoulder, hand off shoulder, car. And I thought, who knows? Hand on shoulder, while I'm saying the word nose. And then hand immediately off shoulder. Okay, now there's nothing magical about you touching your shoulder while you're saying these words. It's just that action, whatever you're doing, is only happening while you're saying the words in the command. Okay, so you can use anything. You can use a facial expression. You can talk to someone, and while you're saying those words, you're doing a different facial expression. Maybe you're smiling. While you're saying the word scratch, you're smiling, and the smile goes away. Later on, you're saying the word your, you're smiling during that. Now, I want to point out, you may have picked up on this. The word knows that I'm using in this example is K-N-O-W-S. Who knows? It's not N-O-S-E, like the thing on your face. Now, why is that? That I would use the word knows, meaning he knows something, to mean knows, the thing on your face. I'm trying to get you to scratch your nose, not to scratch something that you know or understand. That wouldn't make any sense. To have you scratch the concept of understanding. The way that this can be explained is by something called phonological ambiguity. P-H-O-N-O-L-O-G-I-C-A-L, ambiguity, A-M-B-I-G-U-I-T-Y. Can you tell I'm working on a doctorate in education? The beauty of phonological ambiguity is that you can say something, and if it sounds like something else, those two words, like knows, he knows something, K-N-O-W-S, and nose, the nose on your face, N-O-S-E, as long as they sound the same, they are ambiguous in your mind, meaning they're interchangeable. Your subconscious mind does not know the difference between nose, the thing on your face, and nose, K-N-O-W-S, when it hears the words. Remember, your subconscious mind is like a computer, and when it's receiving information, it's acting like a computer would. It hears those words. Even written words are changed into audio in your mind, and so they become phonologically ambiguous. Phonological refers to the sound that the words make. So if those words make a sound, even if they're written, they're going to still translate into a sound in your mind while they're being processed. So if there's a sound that sounds just like the sound of another word, those two words are phonologically ambiguous and can be interchanged. So I can say, while I was walking down the street the other day, I saw a scratch on a car, and I thought it might be your car, but then I thought, I wonder if he knows. I have used the word knows interchangeably. So there are a lot of words in English, and I'm sure in other languages, that are like that are phonologically ambiguous. They sound the same. They mean completely different things, but they sound the same. And so you can use that. Now, that rule of the subconscious mind, the fact that the subconscious mind is programmed with phonological ambiguity, that gives us a lot of leeway, because now we don't have the burden of coming up with words and sentences that are the words of the commands. If I use the word N-O-S-E in a command where I'm trying to get you to scratch your nose, it draws a lot of attention to it. What's up here? Something's going on. Why is he saying the word nose? Okay, so we can be talking about something completely different. I'm not talking about the person's nose at all. I'm talking about what they know in their mind. And I'm still commanding them to scratch their nose. So the subject can be different. The word, as long as it sounds like the word of the command, can be different. And you can still get them to do what you want them to do. Now you may be wondering, well, how well does this work? When I use embedded commands, which I've been known to do at parties, the percentage I have of success is 80%, which means that 80% of the people I try it on, it'll actually work on. 80% of the people I use that type of sentence with, where I'm trying to get them to do something that I can observe, I can see if it worked or not, 80% of the time it works. Now, if you're trying to get someone to do something like eat fewer calories or something like that, well, you're not going to see it happening right then and there. So in the beginning stages, when you're working with this, I recommend giving commands that they can carry out right then and there. That's how you're going to know how effective you're being with your analog marking, with your embedded commands. If you're effective with that, then you can start giving commands that are less easy to see. Maybe things that they'll do later on. You're programming them for something in the future. But you don't want to start with that. You want to make sure you have a tool that works. The way you test it is by having them do things that you can see them do, and also by testing it on a lot of people. We'll talk about that later in the homework, but I just wanted to introduce it now. Okay, so that's how to do analog marking in person when you're talking to someone face-to-face. You have a lot of options. You can use facial expressions to mark the words. You can use movement to mark the words. Or you can say the words more loudly. Or anything else that you can come up with that can happen while you're saying those specific words. What other areas can we use analog marking in? We're not always going to be face-to-face with the person. Sometimes we're going to be talking with them through text messaging, which at the time, 2008, that I'm recording this program, text messaging is very popular. Who knows? Maybe it won't be in a few years. I don't know. But I do know it's popular now. And I imagine that it will survive, at least in some form. So text messaging, I want to teach you how to use analog marking in text messaging. Also on the phone. Sometimes you're having a phone conversation and you'll want to slip a hidden command in. So we're going to talk about that. Also email, or writing a good old-fashioned letter to someone. You can use analog marking through a written mail, a typed letter, or email. It doesn't really matter, as long as there's something that they're looking at, some form of text that they're looking at. So I want to talk about each of those individually and show you how you can use this technology in those arenas. So how would analog marking look in text format? And what I mean by text format is if I'm sending a text to someone, I'm sending them a text message, and I want to embed a secret command in the text message. Well, one of the more obvious ways which may occur to you is to just make the words of the command, the three words, all caps, all capital letters, and the rest of the words in the sentence or paragraph can be lowercase. This is an interesting way to do it. This is probably the most obvious way to do it, but I don't recommend doing this way because of the fact that it is so obvious. Uppercase letters, when combined with lowercase letters, really stand out. You will have covered the job of marking them out. That job will be done. But the job of doing it in a stealthy way, a way in which people don't detect it, that job will have not been done. So rather than embedding the commands by using all capital letters, what I recommend is that you capitalize the first letter of the three-word command. So each of the three words that you want to embed, I recommend that you capitalize the first letter of each word. So for example, in my example, I say I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch. The S in scratch would be capitalized on a car, and I thought it might be your car. The Y in your will be capitalized. And I thought, I wonder if he knows. The K in knows, in K-N-O-W-S, will be capitalized. And again, remember, when your brain sees that, changes it into auditory is vital. So that's how we can deliver embedded commands in text messages. How would we deliver those commands in email? Well, in email, it's going to be essentially the same technique. And you turn it up right when you say those words. The person on the other end of the phone might think, that's a little annoying. But they're probably not going to think, I'm receiving an embedded command. I'm receiving information to my subconscious mind, which is telling me to do something. They're probably just going to think, well, the music happened to go up at that particular point. So you're probably not going to get caught when using this particular technique. So my point is that while those words are being delivered, the three words in your three-word command, there has to be something different going on. Whether it's a change in the way the words look, the way the words sound, or what you are doing while those words are being delivered, it doesn't matter as long as something different is occurring while those words are being seen or read or heard. Something is different during those times, and only during those times. Those words are unique. Remember the field with the trees. Those three trees are the tallest trees. They stand out. There's something different about them. That's the way it has to be when you use analog marking to deliver embedded commands. All right. Well, as you may have suspected, it's time for a quiz. I want to make sure that you have this knowledge in your mind and that you're able to use it appropriately. So let's just take a moment with a quiz to review what you've just learned about embedded commands and analog marking. So question number one. Tell me three ways to mark out words when talking with someone face-to-face. If I'm standing in front of someone and I'm talking to them and I want to deliver an analog marking statement, an embedded command, what are three ways I can make those words distinct? Three ways. Question number two. What are three ways I can mark out my text when I'm texting someone, when I'm sending a text message to someone, what are three ways I can do that? Okay, question number three. What are three ways using email that I can mark out my words? If I want to send a hidden embedded command using analog marking, and I want to do that by email, tell me three ways that I can mark out those words, that three-word command. Okay, and the final question pertains to phone. What are three ways that I can mark out a command when talking to someone on the phone? Okay, now let's go over the answers. If you don't want them yet, then go ahead and pause the recording while you work on these. But let's go over the answers right now. Okay, number one, three ways to mark out words when talking with someone face to face. Well, you may recall that when you're talking to someone face to face, you have more options than in any other situation. There are all sorts of things you can do. There are all sorts of things in each of these categories that I didn't even mention, things that you, using your creative mind, are going to come up with. So three ways that I can think of offhand to mark out words when talking face-to-face with someone. Number one would be just saying the words a little more loudly, the three words in the command, a little more loudly than the other words. Number two would be to make a specific gesture, but only while I'm saying those specific words. I say one of the words, I'm making the gesture, I'm back to the filler words, I'm no longer making the gesture. I'm saying the next word in the command, I'm making that gesture. I can be touching my shoulder, elbow, or head, whatever I want to do. And then I'm no longer making that gesture. And the third way that comes to my mind of marking out words when I'm talking with someone face-to-face is to make a facial expression only while those words are being said. So there are lots of other ways that you'll come up with and you'll probably think of after this program is over. Use them. Try them. Question number two was, name three ways to mark out text. Well, three ways that come to my mind are, number one, by making the first letter of each of the words in your three-word command capitalized, but only the first letter. Another way is to capitalize the entire word, though I don't recommend that way, that you have all these words and then the words that you want to mark out are in all caps. Probably not the best way. Another way, depending on the level of sophistication of the text messaging, is to make the words a slightly larger size. So they can be the same font, but maybe 12 points instead of 10. Okay, so you can make them a different color, slightly different color, different size. You can actually use a slightly different font if you want to. There are no limits to this. You can try all sorts of things. Number three. Three ways that we can mark out words. We have a lot of options in email. Words just like commands. Number two, to test if you're actually doing this the right way, and this is even more important, are they doing it? Because you can get caught and they can still do it. That's okay. What does it matter? You're just trying to get them to do something. Ideally, you wouldn't get caught when you're embedding a command, but what if you get caught and they do it anyway? Well, I would say mission accomplished. So the most important test is, are they actually doing it? Are they scratching their nose? Are they taking out the trash? Are they eating fewer calories? Are they doing what you want them to do? So, as you can imagine, your homework is to find some friends to victimize with your new powers. It's kind of like when people, not to put down the any network marketing groups, but when people join certain network marketing groups, they start to victimize all of their friends. Suddenly, everyone becomes a good candidate for the network marketing group, and they wonder why their friends start hiding and not returning calls. I think you'd be good in my network marketing group. Well, I think I'll avoid you for a while. The good thing about this information and technology is that while you're trying it out, most people aren't even going to be aware of it. So you're not going to lose any friends over it. And if you do get caught, so what? They're friends. Have a good time. Bring them on board. Show them what you're doing, and maybe they can have fun with it also. So your homework is to find people who you can cause to do things. And you can do this through text. You can do this through face-to-face conversation. You can do this through email. Or you can do this through phone. Your choice. Or you can do all four if you really want to exceed my expectations. That's fine too. But I want you to at least do one of the four ways. I want you to, and there are other means of delivering this information also. We talked about writing letters and so forth and typing letters. But all I'm going to do is ask you to pick one. And before you listen to the next module, I want you to send or deliver somehow an embedded command to somebody. Now, if you do more than one, that's fine. If you do a bunch, that's great. My favorite way to do this is to do it in person. It's just more fun that way. Now, the easiest way is probably texting. You can text someone right now. Right as you're listening to these words, you can text someone. But the most interesting way and the most fun way, I think, is to go to a party and talk to a lot of people. Let's say 10 people. That would be a fair test. And have a paragraph that you've memorized that has an embedded command. Make sure it makes sense. If you're talking about walking down the street and seeing a scratch in a car and you wondered if it was someone's car, they're going to say, wait a minute, there's a scratch on my car? I need to take care of that. So you want to make sure that the paragraph that you're delivering makes sense in the context in which you find yourself. Once you have a paragraph that makes sense in the context of that party or wherever you may find yourself, why not deliver it to numerous people? Why not say it to 10 people? Just see what happens. You can make up a paragraph about the party that has an embedded command in it, and you can tell everyone about it and see the percentage of success and see if you're getting caught. Now, here's a little trick. If your percentage of success is low, and 10 people, it's a great number because 2 out of 10 is 20%, 8 out of 10 is 80%. It's very easy to calculate the percentage of success. If your percentage of success is low and you're not getting caught, make your analog marking more distinguished. Say the words more loudly or do a more obvious gesture. And by the way, you can combine these. You can say the words more loudly and do a gesture and do a facial expression if you want, but if your percentage of success is low, yet you're not getting caught, you may be able to increase your percentage of success by marking out the words in a more obvious way. The reason parties are great for this is that you've got a lot of potential victims, a lot of people to victimize with your new powers that I'm unleashing on the world through you. You got a lot of people you can practice on. And chances are, if it's a party, maybe you're not going to see a lot of these people again. But you want to get some practice in. And an actual party with a lot of people is a great way to do this. Doesn't matter to me how you do it. Do it through email, texting, what have you. Now, pick a command that is going to give you an immediate indicator of whether it's working or not. So don't tell someone to grow old rich or anything like that, because you can't watch them grow old in the 2 minutes you'll be spending with them. You want to make sure that it's something that they're going to do: scratch your nose, tie your shoe, comb your hair, something like that, shake my hand, something that you can see them actually do, and you can measure the success in the moment. So go out there. I'm unleashing you to the world now. I'm turning you loose on the world. Look out, world. Here you come. I want you to have fun with embedded commands, with analog marking, and join me in the next module where we'll learn some new techniques and have some more fun. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, hoping you have an outstanding day.
To whom it may concern. It's come to my attention, so-called Pentagram Sam. Just because you watch Buffy and you bought a Chronicle book about Aleister Crowley doesn't mean you reside on the dark side. Pentagram Sam ain't no Pentagram Smarty. I'm spilling all your secrets like I'm Israel Rigotti. You got your cauldron at the Halloween Superstore. You in the basement with your older sister's Ouija board. I'm swagging with the Abram Elam. I got 50 demons gonna do what I tell them. I got 6 sigils on my emerald rings. How about you? You got any of them things? You think you got your hex on? All you got is specs on. Harry Potter, Hot Topic, what you bouncing checks on? I'm blinging in the golden dawn. I'm gonna ting ting and then you be gone. I'm giving crazy witch like Feruza Ball. Scraping pointy boots be the way that I walk. I got crystal balls and my magic is black. Pentagram Sam, I got my wand in your crack. I'm spinning old school on my rider decks while you spin 2 ducats on the special effects. You be quaking in your docks when you hear my malediction. You think you are a warlock, but it's just a fiction. We be chilling with the boneless one, not you, Sam. You be out on your buns. Tend kinda jealous when you hear what I chant. Step aside, poser, I'm the high road fan. Full barrel coffee and a maple bacon donut. Roll a fix, fix down Valencia, I owe it. Facebook friends with Cena LeVay. Pentagram Sam, get out of the way. Pentagram Sam, more like Pentagram Susie. A Pentagram mom's be up in my jacuzzi. We live in San Francisco in the mystical fog. You featured the new disco on your Tumblr blog. I got seen on speed dial, raising dead freestyle. Super fancy necromancy, do I'm hitting meanwhile. Making evil shapes in non-Euclidean geometry. My cover built a creature, then we sent it out to haunt you. You be riding on that busted broom while Misty breaking into every tomb.
With the old ones we stand tall, your kinder coven's gonna fall. Miskatonic you is my alma mater. My territory is Terra, yours is Norwich. Terry, are you daydreaming the witch?
What?
I'll see you in your nightmares, but I bring the Dunwich Core. I can't be found in any bookstore. Cover you in gore or phantasmatical lore. Chronic is the thorn, icky ooze on your front door. To the club, perform the right, blackest night, no hope. Y'all got the velvet ropes, I'm plus 9, you know. Dr. Herbert West, raise a posse for the party. Even Eric Zorn brought his modern monopoly. Look at me and you're petrified, see? Even death will die.
I'm spitting on the Malleus, Maleficarum Daleus. You only got the cliff notes, sacrificing Russian goats.
Casting magic circles with the universal hexagram. Ahaz recalled to Babylon, he's sending you a telegram.
Giving you the boot like you is low rich and adority. The only magic potion that you drink comes in authority. You're blowing up the MySpace right next to your butter face. Pop a page, BB Proof, charmed out sugar, now you're through.
I hope you learned your lesson today. You have been listening to the DJ Dead to the World. Spirit Plants Radio.
Broadcasting around the world.
The world's radio.
SpiritPlantsRadio.com. Turn on. Tune in. And visit us on the web.
schedules, playlists, archives, lots more.
That is the last thing I want to do. I am not a missionary, and I have no message for you. I have only experience, and the way to convey the experience to you is not through words, theories, philosophies. The argument is not the answer. So first I have to dismantle your mind, and the best way to dismantle your mind is to contradict myself as much as I can. Either you will escape feeling afraid that you may go crazy, or if you have guts, you may remain here and really go crazy. When the mind becomes inoperable, that is the moment when heart starts functioning. You are in a good space. If the mind is saying, I don't know, the mind is closing the shop. And here the mind closes the shop, immediately doors of your heart start opening. There are two sides of the same coin. That's why when you hear me contradicting myself, you have a good laugh. That is the right response to my contradictions. Yes, it is still not a state of no mind. It is still mind who is saying, I do not know. When the mind is completely gone, in a state of no mind, there is nobody to say, I do not know. That is the last knowledge. It is knowledge. I do not know, at least this much you know. This is the last barrier. It also drops. Then there is no question of knowing or not knowing. For the first time you feel And feeling is the way of experiencing. When you are in your head, you are millions of miles away from me. When you are in your heart, you are in my heart too. Because hearts don't know separation. The heart is one. It beats in many people. And my whole work is that it beats in the same rhythm in all of you. Then you become an orchestra. There is still much more than the heart in you, but without heart you cannot reach to your innermost treasure, the being. So these are the three words, thinking, feeling, being. From thinking, nobody has ever been able to reach being. Nobody can bypass feeling. Feeling is the bridge. First step is from thinking to feeling, and the second step is from feeling to being, and in two steps the whole journey is complete. So remember, feeling will be tremendously beautiful, but don't stop there. That is only a stopover. You can rest there a little bit, enjoy the world of the heart. But remember, there is one step more. Through contradictions, I destroy your clinging with the mind and thinking. Through silence, I destroy the world of your feeling. And when these both layers are gone, you are as existence wanted you to be, in your purity, in your individuality, you have come home. So don't be worried. The journey has begun. Don't stop until you come back home, where there is no thinking, no feeling, but only a sense of existence. In that experience, I will be able to convey to you that which is unconveyable in any other way. Then I am not the master and you are not the disciple. In the mind, I am the teacher, you are the student. In the feeling, I am the master, you are the disciple. In being, I am not, you are not, existence is.